Welcome to Hampton Roads Perspectives, a public service of Entercom Communications. Weekly conversations about events and people making a difference in our community.
Good morning. It's Ashley with another Hampton Roads Perspective. And this morning I am here with Nisha Himes from GROW, which is Girls Recognizing Our Worth. How are you doing this morning, Nisha?
I'm doing well, Ashley. How are you?
I'm great. So let's get right into it. Can you share a little bit about yourself and your survivor story?
Okay, sure. So I am a survivor of domestic violence. I am an activist and advocate in the community for the awareness and outreach of domestic violence, just trying to assist victims and survivors with rebuilding their lives after abuse. Mm-hmm. I was in an abusive relationship for just about 5 years. With the first year, knowing what I know now, I know that there were a lot of red flags that I didn't either know were red flags or ignored mm-hmm. that they were red flags. The second and third year became very much, I would say, emotionally, mentally, control, manipulation, isolation. With the last year and a half to the fifth year, it became physically abusive and also still had the components of mental, verbal, and emotional abuse. So I got out of that relationship, I would say late 2012, some point 2013, and didn't end easily as far as like a clean break where he just accepted it. I dealt with some things after that, but
I mean, I feel like that's what you would expect too with someone that like mentally abusive and physically,
right.
Like it's going to carry on even when you try to break it
right.
off.
Because abuse is about power and control. So mm-hmm. when a victim chooses to leave that relationship, then the abuser has unwillingly relinquished that power mm-hmm. and control. So when I got out of the relationship a couple years after that, I decided to speak out and share my story. And then that was kind of all she wrote from there once I started sharing my story. And then it turned out people wanted to hear my story. And then it turned out a bunch of people were going through the same thing. So it's just like, wow,
yeah,
I have to do something about this.
So what gave you the courage to, you know, speak out and really advocate?
When I first spoke out, so I do spoken word poetry. So the first time I spoke out was with a mic in my hand. You know, that was the poetry has always been the way that I express myself. It's easier to write something and share my heart to strangers than to sit down and have a conversation with someone and just bare my soul to them. So when I shared my story, it was meant to at first heal me because I had a lot of anger, resentment, just now knowing that that was PTSD from the trauma and everything that I experienced. And then when people started coming up to me like, oh my gosh, my daughter's going through that, I went through that, my sister, my brother,
mm-hmm.
that's what pushed me to keep going and to keep sharing the story. Because
helping other people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because if I could help, it made me feel like what I went through and the pain I went through was validated. It's like, okay, there was a purpose to that. I went through that years of hurt and pain. Not that I deserved it, but taking that and turning it into a purpose and helping others with mm-hmm. it.
Now, when it comes to domestic violence, you always hear people say, well, just leave.
Right.
Just pack up and go.
Right.
It's not as easy as it sounds,
not
correct?
Not at all. Correct. Not at all. And I think unless you've been in a domestic violence situation, you won't understand. And it's not that I wish that on anybody.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that until you're sitting in that situation, anybody on the outside looking in can say, you know, oh, just leave, just get out. But what a lot of people don't realize is the most dangerous time for a woman in an abusive relationship is when she's leaving.
Mm-hmm.
That's the highest instances of homicide when a woman has recently left the relationship or is trying to leave the relationship.
And that's her abuser scary. Your
and
life's
scary.
On the line.
Or if you've been completely financially dependent on this person and you have no money, you have no bank accounts, you have no car, so you have to decide whether you and your children will be homeless or if you should just stay and try to deal with the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different components with why someone can't just leave.
Now, do you think there are any other misconceptions about domestic violence?
I do. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is that it just happens between men and women and that men are always the aggressor. which is not true by any means. I talk to men all the time who are in abusive relationships, and even they don't realize it because it's like, oh, well, she's a woman, she can't abuse me. But that's not true. People also think that it's something that older people go through, you know, and it's really, there's a lot of teenagers dealing with it right now. I speak to kids at schools all the time, and you would be surprised whether they see it in their home, whether they're in relationships themselves. But not to drop statistics, but like 1.5 million high school students a year go through domestic violence.
Wow.
So what's the likelihood?
You wouldn't think that.
Right. So somebody's teenager in Hampton Roads is going through domestic violence. And I know this because I've met them. So.
Wow. Do you think that abusers can change?
That's a tough question. I think that for an abuser to change, they have to want to change. There's nothing that the person who is in the relationship with them can do
to help them.
To make them change.
Yeah.
They have to acknowledge that they have a problem. They have to take accountability for that problem. They have to take accountability for the steps needed to correct that problem. So if they do change, it's because they realize they need to, and they did to work the work to do it. But there's nothing that anyone other than that person can do to make an abuser change.
Do you ever hear from people, victims of domestic abuse, have that personality where they like to help people and they like to fix them, and they thought they were doing the right thing, but really they're just digging themselves deeper in this really dark, dark place? And I feel like you hear that story a lot.
Yeah.
Like people want to fix people, but that's just not how it's going to work.
Right. And I was that person. You want to save, quote unquote. You feel like if you love them long enough, if you love them hard enough, if you just stay and just maybe be this person that they want you to be, not even realizing that nothing you do will ever be good enough for someone who is abusive. They will always find something wrong in what you do. So you can't save somebody who doesn't even know that they need saving.
Exactly. Now, if someone listening right now knows of someone or has a loved one who is a victim of, you know, domestic abuse, how can they get help? What can they do?
So if you have a loved one who is a victim of domestic violence, the first thing I would say is please, please, please don't judge them. Don't say things like, why don't you just leave? Or don't be stupid, or come on, you know better than this, because that's just putting up a wall. It's very hard to come out and admit that you're being abused.
Mm-hmm.
It's humiliating. It's embarrassing. So when you open that door and that person comes to you and confides in you, and then you say, oh girl, just leave, then you've shut that door. That person doesn't want to talk to you. So I would say be non-judgmental. Let them know that you're concerned for their safety and that you just want to help them get to a better place. Offer them resources. Help them do safety planning. And safety planning can consist of packing an overnight bag, keeping it at your house, helping them get documents together like birth certificates, health insurance cards, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just being there and understanding that if they go back, which is a high likelihood, that's their decision, and you just have to, you may not understand their decision, but you have to respect their decision and just be that sounding board and let them know that you are there for them, and understand that you can't save your loved one either. You can say to your blue in the face, just leave, just go, whatever. And
it's not going to do anything.
They have to realize that they deserve better and that they can have better.
Now, you started GROW, your nonprofit. How many survivors does GROW assist on average?
So,
and in what ways?
And in what ways? So GROW, I say we're small in size and big in heart. So like we started officially August 2016. I remember I had like one survivor, right? And even then I was just like, oh my gosh, like we were incorporated August 25th and then I got our first client August 29th. And I was just like, Lord, I don't know what to do. And now on average, I would say it could be anywhere between, an average is like around 10 at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say just yesterday we received two more intake applications. So that brought us up. We're at 12 right now. So for a small nonprofit organization that doesn't have a shelter, and if there's no grants or anything coming in, and we're just operating on the donations we get in the community or Nisha's pocket, then that's a lot. But the services we offer, it can range from helping someone get into emergency hotel stay for about 48 hours to help assist them with getting into one of the local shelters in the area, whether it's Samaritan House, Transitions, YWCA,
her shelter. You work with them.
So, yeah, I have relationships with these shelters, and I can call them and let them know, say, hey, I have this girl or I have this young man and they need assistance. What can we do? So it's GROW works with the agencies in the community to help provide the resources that we're not able to directly provide. Sometimes it's just giving our survivors someone to talk to. We've assisted with getting toiletries, clothing, food, helping pay maybe a utility bill that's past due. Or it just varies, and it's dependent on what resources we have available.
But you're there for them.
Yes, yeah, and that's the biggest thing, just being there for them.
So what about some community awareness events or projects, past or future plans?
So I think we are so dope, right?
Yeah. You
but
should.
I should. We are dope. But I've been to a lot of events. And one of the things that, even before I started GROW, and I said, I want to have events that people remember. I don't want them to just come to an event and they get some pamphlets, and then 2 weeks later they don't know where the pamphlets are and they don't remember what they've learned. So one thing we do, so far it's been annually, we do what's called the Summer Days Ice Cream Giveaway. So I hire a local snow cone truck or ice cream truck, and we take between June and August, visit all of the domestic violence shelters in Hampton Roads and treat the kids and the staff and the parents to ice cream. Because I looked at it like, you know, the children are living in these shelters. They're already dealing with a lot, you know? So what's one thing? It's small, it's
simple. And they'll remember it.
And they'll remember that. And I remember running to the ice cream man when I was little with my sister. So just to see them, like the guy, they'll have the bell ringing and the kids will run out and line up. And I'm like, get whatever you want. So that's always been cool. We have an event with a local boxing gym that I go to. So I like box, like Muhammad Ali box, right? And it's called Square Up, Surviving the Ring in Yourself. So that's one of the things that helped me as far as my healing with being a survivor. I started boxing. So I have women come out and we go to the local boxing gym match bout and they do like a workout. We have guest speakers, there's food, there's live entertainment. I put on a spoken word play, like giving awareness to domestic violence. So it's just various things.
That's
cool. We got
some
projects.
What would you say is the hardest part of running GROW?
Oh, because I've forgotten what sleep is.
Yeah.
But because I work a regular job.
Okay, so you work a regular job and run
And run GROW.
Wow.
So it's like, and then my regular job, I deal with domestic violence as well. So I essentially deal with domestic violence 9 to 5 and then get off work and deal with domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And then it's hard when I have my own clients texting me throughout the day or emailing me or they need help and I'm at work, so I can't just go and answer those calls.
Yeah.
I have to do it on my lunch break or when I get off. And
I was going to ask, how do you find balance?
Right. Well, as far as balance, what's that?
Yeah.
it's you have to find it. So I have to make it a point to find a way to balance my family, my friends, and my nonprofit and my job, and just somehow make it work.
Yeah.
So
now you had mentioned you deal with domestic violence during the day at your regular job. Then you deal with it after work.
Yes.
You deal with it during your lunch break.
Right.
You know, I don't want to say 24 hours of the day, but you deal with it a majority of the day. How do you protect your own mental health? And is it hard for you? I mean, having had experience that a couple years ago, and now you're just reminded with it daily, all day long.
That's a good question. So vicarious trauma is real. And vicarious trauma is when basically you're exposed to trauma on a regular, and then that trauma can affect you. So you'll see nurses, law enforcement, police officers. Those are professions that deal with a lot of vicarious trauma, as do advocates. So I do things like I said, boxing.
Boxing.
That's a great stress reliever. I still write the spoken word poetry, the very thing that helped me first get my story out, and the very thing that's helping me bring awareness is also still very therapeutic. Just spending time with my family, my friends, and just knowing that I can't pour from an empty cup, so and I can only give as much of myself as long as I'm pouring into myself as well. So it's just making myself find that balance.
Now, you mentioned your husband.
Yes.
After living through such a traumatic experience, how were you able to open up and trust someone and let someone love you again?
It was hard. It was hard. One thing I tell anyone, you have to learn to love yourself first before you can love anybody else. And I had that all wrong years ago. Mm-hmm. I could not stand who I was as a person. I had no self-worth. And everything I had as far as love, I gave to this other person who was essentially breaking me.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't learn to love my husband until I loved myself. So that was very important for me. I had to realize that he is not him. He does not deserve to pay for my past, and that healthy love does exist. So it was hard in the beginning when he would do all these things and I would just be waiting for the other shoe to drop. I mean, I remember him taking me out on this really nice date and me running to the bathroom and calling my best friend. And I'm just like, girl, he did this. Yeah. He had the nerve to have candles, you know? And she's like, get it together.
Yeah.
Like, get it together.
The anxiety, I feel like.
She's like, you're going to lose a good guy. Mm-hmm. So get it together.
Wow.
And I got it together. And
does it affect him in any way?
He is... Shout out to Mark. He is he is one of my biggest supporters.
That's
and
great.
He's my best friend. And I think that it's hard for him in a sense to keep hearing this story.
Yeah.
Because in doing advocacy, you have to keep going back to the ugly. So it's like I talk about my ugly past more than I do my beautiful present.
Mm-hmm.
And so he sees me when I'm fighting back tears at events, or if I'm coming home drained and I just want to climb into bed and watch Law and Order and eat ice cream, or, you know, he sees the tired Nisha and the mentally and emotionally drained Nisha, the Nisha getting the triggers at home and dealing with that. So I think it's hard for him in a sense to see that how my past can still affect me. But he's just so great at supporting me, supporting my vision that, you know,
that's
great. I know that I can count on him to help me through it.
Now, if money wasn't a factor, what would be your top three wishes for Grow in order to continue the mission and vision of your organization?
Mm, if money wasn't a factor.
Money's always a factor.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Money's always. I would say one day, just having a building, I would love to have in... whether it's a shelter, I'm trying to figure that out. It's like a safe house,
mm-hmm.
a resource center where people could come and survivors could come and fill out, complete their resumes, do job, you know, interview training.
Help them
and things
with
like
everything.
That. Right. I would love to have just access to be able to travel everywhere and speak because I feel like I deserve to be heard. And there's so many survivors that need help also beyond Hampton Roads.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say a shelter, just a personal choice, unlimited airfare, just unlimited travel ability, and just continuous support, sharing posts, sharing our pages, sharing just information. That's what will help us continue our mission.
What would you say... or how do I phrase this? What would it take to end domestic violence as a whole?
It would take everyone working together. It would take collaboration over competition. So we can't just work separately. You know, Grow can't just do Grow things and not work with the agencies in the area. You know, we have to be willing to work together to end domestic violence. The people who are perpetrating the abuse, they need more resources to get help, to help rehabilitate them. The survivors need more resources to be able to leave their situation because a lot of times they don't leave is because there aren't any resources. Laws need to change. I've seen personally where abusers get just slaps on the wrist. So it's like, I can hurt this person. I can go to court.
They'll say,
oh, I'll put you on probation. And then I'll do it again. And then I come back to court and I get back on probation. So I just think that laws need to change. There needs to be more resources for victims and abusers. And we need to work together.
Now, you save lives, like I said, almost 24 hours a day. It seems like you're like Superwoman. If you could pick your own unique superhero name, what would it be and why?
Ashley. Okay. All right. So Wonder Woman is my favorite superhero. I've always loved Wonder Woman. And then I saw Black Panther, and that was like a whole vibe, right?
Yeah.
So I was just like, oh, like what name would I have if I was in Black Panther? So I don't know if it would be like... Wonder Panther or like
Wonder Panther.
Wonder Panther or
that sounds like a cute little snuggly
but I don't want to be cute. And then like Angela Davis is and she was part of the Black Panther. Uh-huh. She's like one of my favorite like activists. We have the same birthday and everything. So maybe like Panther Woman, is that better than
that's good. That's a strong name.
Panther Woman. Panther okay, so Woman. Wonder Panther sounds like a
yeah,
like
Wonder
a
Panther
snuggly,
sounds,
like
yeah.
a stuffed animal. Okay, so
I'm get my son.
I'll say Panther Woman.
Okay. So you've received recognition more than once for your work in the community as it relates to domestic violence. Is there any one award in particular that really means a lot to you?
I'm appreciative of all of the ones I've received, but the two that stick out, and one technically isn't like awards, an award, I just feel like it is. So I remember speaking at this school in Newport News and Crittenden Middle School. And after I spoke to them and the girls were like ages 11 to 17, they gave me this cup full of all these little notes they wrote for me while I was speaking. So it was like, you know, you're beautiful, Miss Nisha, or keep going, never stop. I'm proud of you. So that little, I still have that little cup of notes. And that was like 2 years ago, two or 3 years ago. And as far as an actual award, I recently won the Voices in Action Survivor Activist Award from the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence.
Wow.
And for me, that meant a lot because my ex, he used to always tell me to shut up. So anybody who follows me on social media, they see I always hashtag, I will not shut up. So to win an award for using my voice and win that award from a national agency for domestic violence awareness, that really meant a lot to me.
Now, what is a platform you haven't been on that you would like to be on to, you know, talk? Ellen?
Ellen. I need Ellen to find me. I love Ellen.
Ellen, if you're listening right now.
We have the same birthday. Look, I said, I have this vision of dancing down the aisle with Ellen, sitting down and saying, you know, girl, we got the same birthday. We're practically twins.
Yeah.
But I would love to go on Ellen.
One question that I would like to ask is, you know, you mentioned your past and helping current women and men, victims of domestic abuse. Do you ever have someone come to you, or maybe actually let me just ask it on personally to you, your ex, do you ever feel like you need to go to the women that he has been with afterwards to help them? Or do you sit back and you're like, not my issue? Or how do you deal with that?
That is a great question. I actually asked that on Facebook just to kind of get everyone's input.
Yeah.
Like, if you saw a picture of your abusive ex on social media, would you, with a new girl or
would you warn the girl?
Would you reach out? And a lot of people said, no, they wouldn't. The girl's, the person, him or her is not going to believe me, blah, blah, blah. And then I was just like, dang, what would I do? I don't know. I, you know what? I would hope that, and that's one of the reasons I speak out so much. Like,
you hope she would hear your story
me,
by
right.
now. Yeah.
And even though I'd never say his name or anything, I would hope that maybe she comes across a news clip or a newspaper article or maybe get someone that I know to just casually, I don't know, because then that goes back to that question that you asked, can abusers change? So what if he did the work to change?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you gotta keep sharing your story and you gotta keep telling people so then it can be spread more and more. Now, lastly, if you could go back in the past when you were in your abusive relationship and tell yourself one thing, what would it be?
It would be a toss-up between I love you and you'll survive this.
Because I imagine you didn't think that you would.
I didn't.
Scary. Now, one thing I like to ask at the end of my interviews is if there's anything else that you would like to share with Hampton Roads today in relation to yourself, in relation to your foundation. It could be anything.
I would say if there's anyone who's going through an abusive relationship or just having trouble finding your self-worth, just know what you deserve. And one thing I tell people is to, when you think about going back to that person who's hurting you, you could give yourself all of the reasons why you need to go back for the kids because you have nowhere to go, all these things. But I need you to ask yourself why you deserve to go back. And that's a different question. And other than that, if you'd like to reach me, if you'd like to learn more about Grow Foundation, you can find us at www.growfoundationva.org. And that's VA like Virginia. We have all of our social media links on there. And other than that, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for coming in this morning and sharing your story. And again, if you're listening and you want to get more information, we made it really easy for you as well. You can visit z104.com. We have all of Grow's information up on there, so it's really accessible for you. And again, thank you so much,
thank
Nisha,
you
for coming in today.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
This has been Hampton Roads Perspectives. If you would like to share information about an event or organization to be featured on a future program, please send us an email. The address is hrp@entercom.com. That's hrp@entercom.com. Or send the information to Entercom Communications, 236 Clearfield Avenue, Suite 206, Virginia Beach, Virginia, 23462. The views and opinions expressed on this program are those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Entercom Communications. Hampton Roads Perspectives is a public service of Entercom Communications.
Streaming live with the radio.com app. Download it to listen to Z104.